Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, where you'll hear inspiring stories and life lessons from amazing Hell Yes entrepreneurs who are running their for-purpose businesses and living their Hell Yes lives. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hell Yes Entrepreneur podcast. I am your host, Norman Bell, and today I am excited to have as my guest on the show, Amy Wanninger. Now, Amy works with organizations that want to build diverse leadership pipelines. She is the author of Network Beyond Bias, Making Diversity a Competitive Advantage for Your Career, and another book, Network Like a Champ, Networking Activity Journal. She is a professional member of the National Speakers Association and a ProSci Certified Change Practitioner. Her other credentials include 2 degrees from Indiana University and a World's Best Mom coffee mug. Oh, it's always great to get one of those.
It is.
I haven't gotten one of those, but, you know, World's Best Dad, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Amy, welcome to the show.
Hell yes. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Thanks for joining me. As I mentioned, Hell Yes Entrepreneurs on one of the previous episodes, Amy's actually a client of mine. So I'm really happy to have her on the show. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of the work we've been doing together over the past month or two. But I do want to spend most of the time talking about Amy's area of expertise and also how she got into this particular, you know, this area of expertise as her kind of Hell Yes path. So, Amy, I always like to start off by asking our guests, what is your Hell Yes?
Oh, gosh. My Hell Yes is helping as many people as I can be inclusive leaders. And that doesn't mean that they have a management title and an actual org chart and set of responsibilities. It means that they're stepping up to the plate to make more and more people feel included and welcome in their spaces and in their workplaces so that we can all contribute at our highest level.
Ooh, okay. Very well said, Amy. I always like to ask, like, when was a time, I don't know, it doesn't have to be, oh, I remember I was 8 years old on the playground when this moment, magical moment happened, but do you remember an early time in your life where this became a, you know, that you realized that this was your Hell Yes?
I don't know that there was one moment, but as I look back, I can certainly see a pattern that developed from my childhood on. My mom says, and I don't know how true this is because we're looking at this through mom-colored glasses, but my mom says when I was 5 years old and I was in daycare, she told me I could have a birthday party and invite some kids from my preschool class. And I said I would only have a party if I could invite everyone from my preschool class because I didn't want anybody to feel left out.
Oh, huh.
Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't remember, but we'll go with it and say that this is something that's been in me for a while.
Great. You wanted to include everybody in the class. You didn't want to leave anybody out. Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So she had 25 5-year-olds show up on a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, man. Yeah. As a dad of an 8-year-old daughter, I know that even 10 is hard to manage. So 25, I can hardly imagine.
Way too many. Way too many.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days.
Oh my gosh, so many things.
Yeah.
So 2018 was really a year just to kind of kick off and find my footing. And 2019 is all about scale, and I am so excited. So last year in 2018, I wrote my first book, Network Beyond Bias. And then I followed that with the Network Like a Champ Networking Activity Journal. 2019 is going to build on some of those concepts. So I have a workbook coming out that kind of goes deeper into the concepts from Network Beyond Bias to help people explore their biases and expand their networks appropriately. And I have an ebook coming out soon called Hire Beyond Bias, which will help hiring managers and teams kind of get out of their own way so that they can find the real talent that is coming, you know, into their organizations. I have some other programs that I've delivered, but I haven't scaled up yet. So this year is just all about making this stuff as consumable as possible so that large organizations, you know, could bring me in for a train the trainer program where I can teach their trainers how to teach my content effectively. Or, you know, they can buy copies of my books that are branded with their company logo or a message from their president. So they can, you know, instead of giving away the tchotchkes at career fairs or, you know, other events, like everybody's got enough coffee mugs and water tumblers, like give them something that sticks.
Swag. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like some good meaty stuff and associate that with your brand and, you know, your, as an employer. And for mid-sized companies and small companies, I'm launching a consulting offering this year. And then I'm still doing programs for companies of all sizes and associations where I can come in and do live group coach or live group programs or online webinars for organizations that want to help build their leadership bench strength from the ground up.
Love it. Love it. You're up to all kinds of great stuff. So great that you've gotten your book out, your books out there, and now you're looking to scale your business. You've got a lot, all kinds of different activities going on. And I think it's great to have you on the show because you're some of the guests we have on the show are, you know, they've been doing XYZ for years and they have their, you know, everything's super established and you have made some great progress in your business, but you're still in motion here, right? So yes. I think it's great to for people, there's got to be a lot of people out there listening to this podcast that are in a similar situation as you or a few steps behind you that would benefit from hearing somebody who, you know, is where you're at in your business. So I want to talk a little bit, one, about your topic of diversity and inclusion. And then after that, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the kind of the nuts and bolts of building your business, right?
Okay.
Like I say, regardless of what the topic is, I'll bet there's a lot of people out there like you that are wanting to write their book, you know, get out there and do public speaking, et cetera. So maybe some of the lessons that you've learned along the way. But first, okay, let's talk about diversity and inclusion. Where do you want to start? This is a big topic. And, I think I could probably speak for a lot of people that, you know, it's a topic that's hard to want to dive into because you don't know where to start. So please lead us in there.
Sure thing. So I think diversity and inclusion is such a big push right now because we have changing demographics in our country. Our world is becoming smaller and smaller, right? Our globe is becoming smaller. We're connected with people all over the place all the time in ways that we've never been before. And so we have to learn to connect across difference if we want to be successful in business and our careers. I think we fall into two traps though. The first trap are people who are just not interested in anybody who's different from them. Mm-hmm. And they want no part of it. They're, you know, they're kind of wanting to, I call it hiding in your hobbit hole and ignore the change that's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's a significant portion of the population, I think, that's trying to hide in their hobbit hole. And that's not the portion of the population I want to reach. And you and I have talked about this before in some of our coaching calls, where I want to talk, the people that I want to talk to are the ones who think, yes, I'm all on board for diversity and inclusion. I think it's great, but that's not something I have to do because I'm an inclusive person. Hmm. And what I want to say to you, if that's your thinking, I could spend 10 minutes with you and absolutely knock your socks off about how not inclusive you actually are. Uh-huh. And you can walk away with very actionable things to do, how you can think about your networking and how you can think about the people that you choose to be around in a professional setting that will absolutely enrich your life and propel your career forward. And that those are the people I get excited talking about because I'll say, well, how diverse do you think your network is? And they say, oh, it's great. I'm connected with a lot of people all over the place and whatever. And then I'll sit down with them and I'll talk them through an assessment tool that I created. And their jaws sort of drop and the light bulb comes on and they're like, I got to get out of here. I got to go talk to people. So it's just really exciting, not because of the impact necessarily that I'm having on that person, but because they're going to go have an impact on so many people. And so you know, I guess in answer to your question, where do we start? You start where you are and you do the next best thing you can.
Okay, so let's dive in there. Let's say you're talking, and you may actually well be talking to one of those people that you were just mentioning. That hey, I'm an inclusive person. I think actually we've had this conversation as well. I would like to think that I'm diverse and inclusive kind of a guy. But if I really take a look at my network, does it bear that out? So whether you're talking to me or to other people in our audience. Just lay it out, like what, show us whether we're diverse and inclusive or not.
Sure. So I'll start with a concept I have called Network Like a Champ. And CHAMP is an acronym, and it's the 5 critical connections for your career.
Okay.
The reason I picked these 5 is because they're ones that you have control over all the time, and they're people that you rely on frequently. So they're the people that are going to be top of mind for you if an opportunity comes up, or, you know, if something great is happening, they're the people that you're going to bring in on it. Okay. Yeah. So the 5 people or the 5 networks, because really you have like a whole network of for each category. But the first one, C, is for customer. Mm-hmm. So your customers have an outsider view of your company, of your industry, and they're really going to let you know what's going on in the market and what's going on that the research isn't showing you, because they know what consumer thinking is before the researchers know what the consumer thinking is, because they're the consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So first is customer. You need to get close to a customer. And it doesn't matter what kind of a job you're in. You know, you might be working in an HR function or an IT function. You still need to know what customers your company's serving so that you know that, so that you keep that person top of mind when you're making decisions in your job. So that's number one. Number two is someone you've hired or helped get a job. That's the H. Now, not everybody's a hiring manager, but if you think about the people that you hire or the people that you would write a letter of recommendation for or connect to a hiring manager or introduce to the best recruiter in town, that's where you're going to build a lot of goodwill in your network and where you're really doing something that's absolutely for someone else's benefit and not your own. Mm. And that really builds just a well of good, you know, just good feelings about you. And then forever and always, that person's going to remember you as someone who helped them when they needed help.
Right.
And that's where you want to be in people's psyche, mm-hmm. right? Is someone that they can rely on to help them.
Okay.
The A is for an associate. And an associate is somebody who has about the same level of responsibility as you. Maybe in your organization, maybe not, you know, these are like pace setters. So, you know, you might have a mastermind group if you're an entrepreneur, for example, where, you know, you hang out with like 5 people and you have accountability check-ins every so often. And, you know, you're just really pushing each other forward, bouncing ideas. It's kind of a safe zone. Okay.
Yep.
So it's C, H, and A. M is for mentor. Everybody needs a mentor. Everybody needs a lot of mentors, frankly. So I have right now, I have 2 coaches. Norm, you're one of them, of course. And I also have another coach that I met about a year ago that I used to help me write my book. And I know that you're helping with book coaching now too. So, but I didn't know you then. So I have 2 coaches right now, but I choose mentors from all over the place. I choose mentors. You know, when I read a book or I attend a webinar, I think of the person who's presenting that information to me as a mentor. Even if it's not a 2-way dialogue, yeah. I can still learn a lot, right? Yep. And then P is for protege. Who am I teaching? Who am I taking under my wing and showing the ropes and making sure that, you know, if there's someplace they shouldn't step, I'm letting them know that before they fall. And so just in that, if you've got all 5 of those, you're doing pretty well from a career perspective in terms of networking like a champ. That's one dimension though. The other dimensions are, so that's the depth of your network, but there's also a dimension that goes, that speaks to the breadth of your network, which tells you, are these people outside of your same industry? Are they outside of your same age group? Are they, you know, are they different from you in meaningful ways across gender and race and sexual orientation? So all these different ways that people can be different. And then the third dimension of the assessment tool is it's all about storytelling and how much have you shared with these people? Because when we tell each other stories, we build trust. And when we build trust, we build relationships. And it's the people with whom we have trusting relationships that we want to do business for the long term.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's my very, very specific and personal take on diversity and inclusion and how we need to, you know, think about all of these dimensions at once and how they interplay so that we're finding as much opportunity for ourselves and others as possible.
Got it. Well, you've shared this breakdown with me before, but the CHAMP, breakdown, customer, hired, et cetera. I was writing that down, and let's say maybe some of our listeners were writing that down as well. And as they were going through the different categories, they were thinking to themselves, how diverse is that category for me? Well, maybe not as diverse as I was thinking, right? As was the case for me when you took me through that. So now what do we do? So let's say my network is not as diverse as I would have liked to have thought. One, I want to know, like, what should I do then? But maybe before we get there, why should I do it? You talked about diversity, having a diverse network as being a competitive advantage. Why is that?
Well, so if you are only around people that do the same type of work you do in the same geographic location, that live in the same community, that see the same movies, consume the same news, read the same books, where are your new ideas going to come from? How are you going to ever innovate? Yeah. And that's, unfortunately, most of us network based on who's easiest, who's closest, who's the most like me.
Right.
And it's not until we break out and see things with fresh eyes that we really can explore new ideas. Because there are no new ideas if you're just replicating yourself over and over and over in your network.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I would flip that question a little bit, Norman, and say, what's the advantage? What's the competitive advantage of only talking to people who are just like you?
No, I think that, I mean, when you put it that way, it makes perfect sense. Like, of course, you want to have, diverse perspectives, diverse backgrounds. You'd just be meeting people like that. It couldn't help but better your experience in the workplace and in life in general. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to then what do I do now? What steps would you recommend that people like me take to diversify our networks?
Sure. So there are little things and big things, and I think it comes down to the individual. First of all, I don't think the assessment results are one size fits all. So if you sat down and did the assessment that's in the book, you may come up with a whole lot of diversity in your network relative to 50 other people that took it. And you may feel like that's not enough, like you still need to do more, right? You may come up with not a lot of diversity in your network and feel like you're just fine with that. Thank you very much and have a nice day. I'm not here to tell you how much you should have. What I've noticed, though, is most people think they're doing a lot better in terms of diversity. They think they have more diversity and depth than they really do. Mm-hmm. So when they see it on paper, it spurs them to action. It spurs them to think differently and challenge themselves to just get a little bit uncomfortable. And by a little bit uncomfortable, I mean, if you see somebody at work who's always eating lunch with themselves, go introduce yourself. Say hello. What are you working on? How did you get to be in this company? What excites you about our industry? Right? Simple things. Just make a connection. And it could be something like that. It could be follow people on social media that are thought leaders outside your industry and find out what's going on somewhere else. It might be, consume your news from a different place. So, there are all kinds of niche news sites, right? You've got like financial news that's very specific to a community of financial, people who work in the finance industry, for example. Maybe instead of that, you go, read, read sources from human resources or, NBC, I think, not to plug any particular brand, but NBC has different websites for LGBT news and Black news, right? So they have like these niche websites. Go read what's important to these other communities that maybe you're not a part of and see what's the conversation like there.
Yeah.
because they're paying attention to different stuff, right? And so those are kind of some low risk things. High risk things, go to a conference that's not for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm a white woman. I've worked in the insurance industry. I went to a conference that was probably 85% black women and 15% black men. And it was all about media presence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating. It was wonderful. And I learned so much because I was forced to be in this, extreme minority, right? I was one of, you know, just, there was one other white woman in the whole room. And, you know, it forced me to be very reflective and very emotionally intelligent, really think about what I was about to say in the same way that people of color might have to do that if they were in an all white space or a predominantly white space. And so put yourself in situations where you're the other and feel how that feels and see what you learn and what nuances you can pick up that maybe you wouldn't expose yourself to otherwise. That's high risk, but it's really educational.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Go to a conference that's not for you. Because actually that, you know, I wonder how often people would even come across that thought unless they were proactively doing something like this, right? Because of course we only like, well, I'm going to go to a digital marketing conference or I'm going to go to a podcasting conference. I did go to a podcasting conference a couple of years ago, but yeah, to specifically say, okay, the main reason I'm going to this conference is to get out of my comfort zone as far as, you know, being around people that are not part of my usual social or business circles or whatever. Yeah. I think that's great. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Norm, if you like next time you go to a podcasting conference, pay attention to what's on the agenda.
Yeah.
Because there's probably one breakout that's for, you know, podcasters of color or women who podcast.
Yeah.
Go to those sessions, show up and find out what are they talking about that's different than what's going on in the general session or what's going on in, you know, some other, you know, un-niched session.
Yeah.
Go learn what those issues are, what the barriers are for those folks. And then you can be part of that solution.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that. There's a few different directions my mind is going right now. One is that we're more in this kind of a situation now than ever before, right? Like our media, we all used to look at the same news and listen to the same things and so forth. And now we're all in our own little worlds, right? I guess the biggest example would be sort of the red and blue media and politics and so forth and the way we see the world. But like you said, that can get into very specific niches that we have no awareness of unless we, you know, kind of dip our toe in that water, right? So I think that's interesting. And I also wanted to clarify when you're talking about diversity, I think when I hear that term, I'm usually thinking about race, gender, sexual orientation. But as you were saying, that includes industry, age. Well, give us the whole range of what is under that banner of diversity.
Well, anytime you have two people in a room, you have diversity. And that's true if the people are from other sides of the world, opposite ends of the world, or if they're identical twins, right? Yeah. You've always got diversity if you've got two people in the room. And I think the more different backgrounds you can assemble and take those perspectives in, I think the more critical thinking you'll do, the better decisions you'll make. As far as like all of the facets of diversity, oh my gosh, there are so many, right? There are introvert and extrovert. There's, you know, neurotypical and neurodivergent. There are, you know, for every type of disability there's diversity, right? So you might have somebody with mobility issues. You may have someone with chronic pain. You might have someone who's limb different or blind or deaf or hard of hearing, or, you know, there's so many different, or, you know, has cancer or is, you know, recovering from cancer. You've got economic differences, you know, social class differences, although we pretend that doesn't exist in this country. So there's all these things that we assume about people. We can't see how they're different from us. And we might say things that are very callous or very, very careless if not callous, careless. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know that that person that's in the room with us is hurt by that, then, you know, we're doing damage to that person without even knowing it. And a lot of times it's the people that are taking that damage on that are the least able to speak up. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us to recognize that, you know, the types of values that we have, or, you know, the way that we talk about people are not universal, and they're not universally acceptable. And so if you really want to respect people, you just need to be careful. Make sure that you're respecting people all the time, not just when you think they're watching.
Good. I like that. I want to take us back to, let's say I went to the podcasting conference, and then mm-hmm. I went to that one offering that was for mainly targeted at people of color. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of related to what you were just talking about, which was we need to be careful about how we communicate to different groups, different cultures, and so on. But I think that to a certain extent also is an inhibiting factor that may prevent people like me. I don't know if there's anybody else out there listening that can relate, that I want to talk to people of different races and cultures and so forth, but I'm afraid I'm going to say the wrong thing. And so I don't say anything at all. So do you have anything about, so there I am at that workshop at the conference. Now, what do? Do I go up to people afterwards and say, hey, I just want to introduce myself, or what do you recommend?
So what I would recommend, especially if you're in that situation where you're taking yourself and purposefully, you know, going somewhere where you're going to be the different one, right? Like, that's an intentional decision on your part. Number one, two ears, one mouth. Listen. Don't speak. Don't ask questions. Don't ask people to slow down, because, you know, you need to understand, like, you need to get to square one of where they are, because that's their lived experience. Like, just sit there for an hour, say nothing, take notes, write questions, and listen. And then go do your own research, right? If you want to know why something's a problem, or you want to know what a word means, or you don't understand terminology or whatever, write it down and go Google it after, or Google it on your phone while you're there. Don't ask people to stop for you. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, we don't always have to have an opinion, right? So I think when we're used to being part of the dominant culture or the dominant demographic within an industry or a group, we feel like we have almost a responsibility to speak up, right? And I would say when you're in that situation, that is your time to not speak up, just listen. Mm-hmm. And if somebody says, what are you doing here? Which I've gotten a lot, right? Why are you here? I'll say, I'm here to listen. Mm-hmm. And if you just say that and you stop, people like you automatically, because out of the 400 people that are there, you're the one who came to listen.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Instead of to come and try to explain to them, you know, how they're doing something wrong or how easy it is for you, that doesn't fly, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm just here to listen. I just want to learn. And that'll go so far in building relationships. And that's when you get invited out for coffee, right? Because somebody says, oh, that's great. And then they want to include you.
Right.
And so I would say, don't go in trying to make friends and shuffle your business cards out like a blackjack dealer. Like, go in, sit down, and listen, and be intentional.
Great. I love that. I'm here to listen. So I'm trying to take out the, you know, sometimes it's hard with all the information we get, but just like the chunks that I can take out, go to a conference that's not for you. I'm here to listen, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's good. What else? I think you have something that, you know, after we're done here, I was just noticing that the link to the page that you had prepared for our listeners, where there's 21 insights you've prepared that are, I think, taken from your book about mm-hmm. inclusive networking. Now, I'm not going to ask you to go through all 21 here, but, and we're already in the midst of this, right? You've already given us some great tips. But anything else that comes to mind? I'm thinking of, like, what about, you know, let's say I'm looking at my LinkedIn network and realizing it's not as diverse as I would like. But how do I go about doing that without, you know, kind of feeling a little bit like, oh, I'm just trying to do this to diversify, you know?
Well, so first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing something with the intention of diversifying.
Okay.
I think it's good if we want to hear different perspectives on things. And, you know, I think there's a tendency for us to accept our own defaults but also to accept the defaults that are given to us. And so instead of thinking about it like, oh, you know, I'm such a hero because I'm going to go, you know, seek out people who are different. Like, think about it like this, like I'm rejecting the default narrative. Mm-hmm. I want to learn more in addition to, right? So you're adding a perspective. So, you know, if you do a search on, you know, blank thought leaders, and blank is something that's not you, right? Or not dominant in your industry. So like if you work in finance, women thought leaders in finance, yeah. If you work in, whatever it is, right? Pick an other and just Google it and find the people who are, you know, kind of breaking barriers in that space. I met a woman, she's a Black woman in Texas, and she's a lawyer. She's a cybersecurity expert. She's a former FBI agent, and she's fascinating. And, you know, people want her to come and talk about diversity at events. And it's like, no, she should be talking about cybersecurity because that's right. What she's an expert in. Yeah. But they can't imagine it because they've never seen, you know, they don't see that enough. Yeah. So go look these folks up. They're out there. You just have to kind of do the work and then follow them on LinkedIn. And then more importantly, share their stuff. You don't have to comment. You don't have to weigh in. Just share.
Okay.
And amplify those voices in your spaces where the people around you aren't going out and looking for the Black legal scholar who's an FBI agent, criminal justice person who's a cybersecurity expert, right? You bring that person into your network by retweeting and reposting.
So I wonder, like, sharing is almost kind of like the online equivalent of listening, right? It's like, rather than, you know, like you're adding on your thing of saying, well, blah, 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 where you get a little point for that. You're just, hey, I'm here. Hey, passing this along to my yes. network.
Yeah. Yes.
Excellent. What else? Anything else? Any other? These are great. So I think that people are probably getting a lot out of
it. Yeah, buy the book because it's full of stuff like this.
Yeah. Okay. Buy the book.
How's that?
That sounds good. Yeah. And so let's shift a little bit to thinking about, you know, a lot of the people listening to this are hell yes entrepreneurs. So, so one, I guess we could explore a little bit about, is this different or the same? If you're an entrepreneur, let's do that just a little bit before we talk about your business and some of the lessons you've learned along the way. But let's say, I'm an entrepreneur, which is actually the case. And does all this, everything apply here, or is there anything different to think about?
I'm going to tell you it applies times 10.
Okay.
So anything you might've been doing for your career before you were an entrepreneur, you still had the safety net of you're probably going to get your salary next week if you didn't do all of those things, right? Okay. So networking was kind of important if you wanted to get ahead, if you were an employee, but now it's 10 times more important because you've got to figure out, you know, where's that next paycheck coming from? And you've got to get out there and know more people and connect more people with opportunities and be top of mind for more people. And so the only way you're going to do that is if you're building trusting relationships over time and you're doing that with people who are from a diverse set of experiences and backgrounds.
So get out there, hell yes, entrepreneurs, and start diversifying your network. I think that sounds awesome. Yes. Hell yes. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about how your business is going. So you're, you know, you had a great year last year, and I'm in the middle of writing my book. I mean, my first book anyway. And, one thing I was noticing in looking at a lot of the guests that have been on the show, is many of them have written books. You know, they focus on public speaking. They're doing their own podcasts. These are just a few of the ways that you can kind of start to establish yourself as a thought leader in a particular space. And you're doing a lot of those things. So why don't you first tell us a little bit about your process for writing the book and anything around that? Like, what has that done for you to have a book, et cetera?
Sure. So my process for writing the book, or like the impetus for writing the book, was really kind of funny. So in 2016, I went to the first conference I'd ever been to in my career. And I got a lot to say about my former managers who never sent me to a conference because I know I was high potential for all the years before that. And it probably would have been life-changing quite a bit before that. And certainly opened my eyes to what was going on in my industry, bigger and broader. But all of that aside, I went to this conference and I was like, wow, I'm so happy to be a part of, it was an insurance industry conference. And I was so happy to feel so connected to my industry. And as I was going through the presentations and the, you know, all the different breakout sessions and keynotes and all of that, I thought, wow, I could do this. I want to give back to this group because I feel so welcome here. I feel so fulfilled. And so I submitted a proposal for the following year's conference. I had three sentences and a couple of bullet points, and they accepted my proposal. Mm-hmm. And then I said, and you may have to bleep me, but I said, oh shit, now I got to write an hour of content to go with these bullet points. Yeah. And no idea. Like I knew what I wanted to talk about. I didn't know what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And I specifically knew I wanted to talk about diversity and inclusion in the insurance industry. And because of the nature of the people that were at this conference, it had to appeal to people who were in all different job functions at all different stages of their career, all up and down the hierarchy. So no small task, right? Like there's no like focus group, right? It was broad. And I thought, well, networking is important to everybody, no matter where you are in your career. And it's something that can definitely be enhanced by, you know, inclusion, inclusive behaviors, and seeking out diversity. So I'll go that route. And then as I was working on the content for that, I came up with the assessment tool that I told you about. And I took my own assessment and I was absolutely mortified at how long I'd been volunteering and doing diversity and inclusion work and being an advocate and an ally and a vocal person around the diversity and inclusion efforts that were going on in my employer. And yet I had nobody in my network who was a different race or a different national origin. I had almost no one who was, I had no one who was younger than I was. So it was really just awful from my perspective, based on what I thought I was going to see when I took it. And so the thing that happened was I changed my behaviors. I started mentoring in different places. I started asking different people to mentor me. I started showing up in places I wouldn't normally show up because I thought I've got to get out there and I've got to like really connect with people. And when I saw the power that that had for me and what it did for my career, I knew I had to share that with other people beyond this one conference in the insurance industry one time. Mm-hmm. And so that's what became the blog, which became the book. And I think I shared this program something like 40 times in 2018, mm-hmm. At different conferences around the country and a few companies. And I think I lost track of the question, but my process for writing the book was I started with the blog. I hired a coach who helped me get organized with everything, which was great. Helped me get over kind of the overwhelm of a blank document and just start plugging away a little piece at a time until I got to the end.
Got it. Well, before we say anything more about the book, that's actually really helpful to hear that your kind of your origin story of your business and that when you took the test, you also were kind of like, oh, this is not where I want my, you know, as diverse as I thought my network was, right?
So absolutely.
That can maybe the rest of us out here who are thinking, oh no, maybe Amy's got it all figured out. No, you also didn't at the beginning as well.
Amy is very much a work in progress, as are we all.
Yes.
So.
Indeed. Okay, so then I don't know if we need to go so much into how did you structure the book and everything, but unless you want to, but either to talk about a little bit about that. Was it based on your blog posts? I mean, were you basically kind of using that as source content for the book?
No, I actually kind of did it in the reverse. I had the outline of what I knew I wanted to talk about. And then I started dripping the content out as blog posts because I knew I had, like, I knew I wanted to do a chapter on, for example, on race, because you really can't talk about diversity if you're not willing to talk about race. That was the hardest chapter to write because as a white person, I feel uniquely unqualified to talk about race. So I asked for some help from some of the people in my network to kind of keep me honest on that. And I put it out there as a blog post first to kind of see, you know, did I hit the right notes? Did it land okay? And the response I got from it was, yes, you were on the right track here. Thank you for this. So I thought, okay, if that's the worst, if that's the hardest thing I have to do to write this book, and I've got that one done and I did okay, the rest of it's going to be easier. But so I had some pieces of it that I released in blog form first and then kind of altered them and modified them for the book. But you know, some of it was just like brute force. Like I have to write this chapter. And then at the end, I gave myself a deadline that by like, I was going to be finished by like April 30th or something. And it forced me to cut a couple chapters that really didn't fit mm-hmm. because I thought, well, I would really like to address that because I have a story to tell there. And then I kept trying to find a way to shoehorn it into the book. And my deadline was getting tight. And I was like, no, that doesn't go there. And I just ripped it out. And it was so freeing to know I didn't have to do that part. And I can put that content somewhere else. Yeah. So you don't have to put everything into the book.
Right. Yeah, I've heard the phrase, kill your darlings, you know, yes. like these things that, oh, I really love this part. Okay, you got to get them out of there. They're just not going to fit.
You can find another home for it.
Good. And what is it? What is it? Has it helped you to have a book? I mean, everybody talks about the book, right?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I guess the first thing I would say is don't write a book if you don't have something to say. Because you got to say a whole lot of something if you're going to write a book. I mean, 30,000 words is a lot of words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was hard for me because I always wanted to write a book, but I couldn't figure out, like, what would I say that would be different from what everybody else has said? Because everybody has written a book on leadership. And, you know, it's like, how much more can you really say about X, right? And so when I started researching this topic, I was like, oh, nobody's done it this way before. And I started... I started talking to some of like the established experts in the space and, you know, hey, have you ever seen anything like this? No, we haven't. So, you know, I knew that I was onto something. I was like, either this is a great idea because it's brand new or it's a horrible idea because nobody thought it was worth their time before.
Right.
I guess I'll find out. But yeah, it's absolutely, you know, it's helped me to have a book. It's given me a lot of places to start discussions, and it forced me to kind of organize my thinking around some of these topics that, like you said at the beginning, a lot of people don't want to talk about. So how do you talk about these things in ways that are not unsettling and don't, you know, send people screaming? Like, you know, I had to really spend some time with that. If I had tried to do this without writing the book, I don't know that I would have the same, I don't know that I'd get the same feedback about being accessible that I get having written the book.
Yeah. And I don't want to downplay my book, but I'm, you know, it's going to be my first attempt. And yours, it seems very comprehensive around your topic. I noticed that it's forcing me to, organize my thoughts around these different themes that have come up over the course of the podcast and what, you know, different interviews I've had and so forth. So, I think that forcing function or whatever the term may be has been very helpful.
And it's so nice to be able to, when you meet someone, you know, and they say, well, what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm an author.
Right.
Which, by the way, the coolest thing happened to me yesterday, Norm. Okay. So you want to know, like, people always say, well, you know, was it worth it to write the book? And would you do it again? Hell yes, I would. And here's why. I Googled myself yesterday. And the first thing that came up, the official Google thing, was Amy C. Wanninger, author.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's it. Like, I don't have to say I'm an author. Google said it.
Google said I'm
done.
Done. Nice. Well done.
Thanks.
Hell yes. Okay. And then what, so you've got the book and now you're, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, some of the things that you're up to. So what's your business model? I know it might be a work in progress, and maybe we can touch a little bit on some of the things that we've been working on in our coaching session. I'm not asking for like a, you know, a big promo here, but just kind of some of the terrain that we've been covering. Tell us a little bit about how.
So, you know, I don't have my MBA yet, but so I don't know that I can speak to business model, but I can kind of talk about sort of what my approach has been. So sure. I started with primarily speaking as my primary revenue stream. I would say that's still my primary revenue stream, although I'm hoping that book sales will overtake that soon, especially with some of the programs that I'm introducing for, you know, large corporate orders and that sort of thing. Because I think that I think the book is very broadly applicable, and a lot of people will benefit from it. So I'm hopeful that that will be my primary revenue stream. And that's a little bit more passive, which is great because my family would like to see me occasionally, just occasionally, not all the time. You know, they need to get me out of the house some so that, you know, I'll be nice. But anyway, so right now my primary is speaking and my secondary is book sales. I anticipate 2019 primary will be book sales. Secondary will be speaking, and the kind of the third revenue stream will be consulting.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, you're kind of gradually building. I know that you've got, you know, some speaking engagements going on, and you're here, you are on this podcast. And how many other podcasts are you, you've got several lined up, right?
Oh, Norm, if I tell you, it makes me feel a little, like I'm getting around a little too much. If you know what I mean.
What? But, this isn't the only podcast that you've...
I'm sorry. I do have others.
I thought I had an exclusive here.
I know. So I set a goal. So today, the day we're recording this, if it's okay if I say this out loud,
yeah,
is January 4th. And I set an intention on December 20th, I think, December 21st, somewhere in there. I set an intention that I wanted to do 50 podcasts in 2019.
Nice.
And as of today, I have 5 recorded and 5 more scheduled.
Nice.
And we're 4 days into the year. So I'm like 20% to meeting that goal in the first 4 days.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you have a podcast, you definitely need to have me on this.
Yes. So just contact her. Just go right to her website. I can vouch for you, Amy, from working with you for the past couple of months, that you are an action taker. And from week to week, you know, from session to session, I'm always amazed at the amount of stuff that you get done. So good on you. Good on you.
Thank you.
Cool. So as we start to wind down here, I always like to, you know, make sure that, well, here's a question I haven't asked of the last couple of interviews I've done, but there's something I call a cringeworthy vision. Do you have a big vision? And I call it that because it's a vision so big, it makes you cringe to think about sharing it with other people. And now I'm giving you a chance to share it with our audience here. Do you have a big vision of where you want to go with your business, in your life, et cetera?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll give you two. The first one is, when I was 12 years old, I had a list of goals. I had like a vision board before that was a thing. Mm-hmm. And one of my goals was write a book someday. And the other goal was to be on Oprah as an expert something. So my first cringeworthy vision is that Oprah will have me on her show, which doesn't even exist anymore as far as I know. So she'd have to like bring the show back to have me. That's number one. And I'm sure she's getting right on that. So, right. You know, Oprah, have your people call my people.
Yeah.
But you know, if you talk about like cringeworthy vision for the business, I had someone approach me about teaching my book in their management, like their emerging leader training, alongside Covey's 7 Habits.
Oh, yeah.
And it occurred to me in that moment, I could be the Stephen Covey of diversity and inclusion.
Whoa.
And I thought, wow, that would be really cool. Like, that's cringeworthy if you, yeah. But
yeah,
that's why not me? Why not me?
Why not? Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Hell yes, entrepreneurs. So there you, great. That was a great, actually, that's the first time I've asked that this year. So that was a great first cringeworthy vision of 2019, Amy. And for those of you out there listening, why not you, right? Other people speak to 50,000 people in a stadium. And that's one of my dreams. Like, I couldn't possibly do something like that. Why not? Why not me? Why not have Amy be the Stephen Covey of diversity and inclusion? So good. Good on you. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you for not cringing while you were looking at me, by the way.
I forgot to cringe. No, we should. We just got to cringe.
Yeah, there we go.
Where can we find you on the internet for anybody out there who wants to connect with you, book you on their podcast, get your book?
And so, I'm everywhere. But the best place to find me is at leadatanylevel.com.
Okay.
And I will give, Norm, I'll give you the link for your show notes. So if folks use that link, they'll get a complimentary ebook, as you mentioned, with 21 insights. And then if they download the ebook in a few days, they'll get the first 50 pages of Network Beyond Bias in their inbox as well.
Oh, sweet. Okay, great.
Two gifts.
Yeah. So listeners out there, we got a little, you know, a little bit of a start on digging into this topic of diversity and inclusion. But if you want even more, the links will be in the show notes for you to take that next step. So Amy, thanks so much for joining us. I always like to round things out by saying hell yes on the count of three with my guest. It's kind of like I used to do a longer hell yes. I'm doing more of a short hell yes sort of a thing.
All right.
So on the count of three, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, let's do this. One, two, three.
Hell yes.
All right.
Love it.
Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a Hell Yes Life.